history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there which really need to be told. And we're never going to enjoy the privilege of hearing them unless we take the initiative to ask a few questions and then take the time to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And you know what? When we do that, we end up so thankful we did. We're educated, we're entertained, often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. We've been marking 75th anniversaries from the final year of World War II, and this week, it's a big one, VE Day. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com for a link to the VE Day commemoration stream from the Friends of the National World War II Memorial. Victory in Europe for the Allied forces 75 years ago meant different things to different people. To civilians throughout Europe, it meant the end of Nazi oppression. To American servicemen and women, it meant maybe a chance to return home, unless Uncle Sam decided to send you to the Pacific, where war would last another 3 months. For newly liberated American prisoners of war, it was a huge relief. They knew the freedom they had just regained would not be taken away. We're going to hear some of those perspectives today, but first, let's do something we probably don't do often enough on this program. Listen to what Americans would have heard 75 years ago, maybe even on the same radio station you're listening to the program on right now. Harry Truman had been president for less than a month since the passing of Franklin D. Roosevelt, but Truman had the privilege of sharing with the American people on May 8, 1945, the news they'd been hoping to hear for years.
This is a solemn but a glorious hour. I only wish that Franklin D. Roosevelt had lived to witness this day. General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations. The flags of freedom fly all over Europe. For this victory, we join in offering our thanks to the providence which has guided and sustained us through the dark days of adversity. And now I want to read to you my formal proclamation of this occasion. The Allied armies, through sacrifice and devotion, and with God's help, have wrung from Germany a final and unconditional surrender. The Western world has been freed of the evil forces which for 5 years and longer have imprisoned the bodies and broken the lives of millions upon millions of freeborn men. They have violated their churches, destroyed their homes, corrupted their children, and murdered their loved ones. Our armies of liberation have restored freedom to these suffering people, whose spirit and will the oppressors could never enslave. United, the peace-loving nations have demonstrated in the West that their arms are stronger by far than the might of the dictators or the tyranny of military cliques. The power of our peoples to defend themselves against all enemies will be proved in the Pacific War as it has been proved in Europe. For the triumph of spirit and of arms which we have won, and for its promise to the peoples everywhere who join us in the love of freedom, it is fitting that we, as a nation, give thanks to Almighty God, who has strengthened us and given us the victory. Now, therefore, I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States of America, do hereby appoint Sunday, May 13, 1945, to be a day of prayer. I call upon the people of the United States, whatever their faith, to unite in offering joyful thanks to God for the victory we have won, and to pray that He will support us to the end of our present struggle and guide us into the ways of peace. I also call upon my countrymen to dedicate this day of prayer to the memory of those who have given their lives to make possible our victory.
President Harry Truman on May 8, 1945, the official day of Nazi Germany's unconditional surrender to Allied forces in Europe. You heard the president say General Eisenhower had informed him of that news, and there's quite a story behind that. It came in a 74-word coded message from the Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Forces in Reims, France. The man chosen to send that message is still living, and I spoke with him this week just before he was set to board a plane from Arizona to Washington, D.C. to be honored at the White House by President Trump. Gregory Malikian is 96 years old now, but still very energetic. Greg promised me he'd share his story here on Hometown Heroes after returning from his latest adventure, so we can look forward to that. And after General Eisenhower's coded message went out, after Truman shared the news with the country, Eisenhower had his own words to share with the world on behalf of all the Americans serving under him.
I have the proud privilege speaking for a victorious army of almost 5 million fighting men. They and the women who have so ably assisted them constitute the Allied expeditionary forces that have liberated Western Europe. They have captured or destroyed enemy armies totaling more than their own strength. Merely to name my principal subordinates in the Canadian, French, American, and British forces is to present a picture of the utmost in efficiency, skill, loyalty, and devotion to duty. The United Nations will gratefully remember Tedder, Montgomery, Spots, Bradley, DeLotte, Creer, and many others. But all these agree with me in the selection of the truly heroic figure of this war. He is G.I. Joe and his counterpart in the Air, the Navy, and the Merchant Marine of every one of the United Nations. He has braved the dangers of U-boat infested seas. He has surmounted charges into desperately defended beaches. He has fought his tedious, patient way through the ultimate in fortified zones. He has endured cold, hunger, fatigue. His companion has been danger. Death has dogged his footsteps. He and his platoon commanders have given us an example of loyalty, devotion to duty, and indomitable courage that will live in our hearts as long as we admire those qualities in men.
General Dwight Eisenhower praising the American GI in the wake of the Allied victory in Europe 75 years ago. So you've heard from the president and the top general, but what did it mean to the men and women in uniform? We're going to spend the rest of our hour hearing how and where some of them experienced VE Day, and in some cases we'll need a little build-up to that to put it in perspective. Some of these veterans are still with us, others have passed, but their VE Day stories and all their World War II memories remain. Luis Rodriguez had been picking oranges in Exeter, California when the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor pulled America into World War II. He had survived the Battle of the Bulge and plenty of close calls with the 240th Field Artillery Battalion, which fired its final shots about a week before the official surrender.
May the 1st, that morning, early in the morning, we fired our last shot. It was one of those wet days. It had been snowing and of course, it was warmer weather. The snow was melting and made the ground very, very muddy. But we were supporting the 14th Armored Division, a good division, and along with the 99th Infantry Division. And they were, some of their troops more or less stayed where we were at. And we were wondering what in the world is going on. We're not moving, no orders, no nothing. So what had happened was that the front was moving so fast that the armored division no longer needed us, so they retired us from duty, and we were told to go back and establish a place to stay until we were called. And knowing what was going on, we knew better that we had fired our last shot in Europe, and that's the way it was.
Now you have a frame of General Dwight Eisenhower's order of the day from May 5th, 1945, when he talks about the crusade that the Allies had been on since the summer of 44, reaching its glorious conclusion. Do you remember hearing those words or reading those words from your commander and feeling anything specific about that?
I sure do. I'll never forget that day. It was an article in we used to get a newspaper whenever we could get it, Stars and Stripes newspaper. And on it was, in the front page, was this letter written from General Eisenhower. And it was something that we had dreamed up for 9 months. And here, the day had arrived that all guns had gone to rest and we no longer needed to fire anything. And we wondered what our next duties would be. And we didn't take us long to find out. We were pulled into occupation of Germany.
Many Americans would participate in the occupation of Germany. Many would be sent to the Pacific Theater or home to train for the Pacific. Filda Brodalski had cared for some of the wounded in the Normandy invasion. She had joined the Army right after the attack on Pearl Harbor, where her older sister was a nurse when the Japanese attacked. Her entire family had been all in for the war effort for years, so the defeat of the Third Reich was significant.
We were in Leipzig, Germany, when the war ended. We were on an air base, a German air base, in the barracks there. And I think we were all relieved. I know that they brought some wax in on an airplane, and that night the hospital celebrated all over the place because we were happy. Finally, it was over, you know. And then it was a slow trip back home.
And how many siblings did you have serving in one part of the war or another?
Oh, I had a brother who was in the Navy, mm-hmm. and I had a brother who was in Pan American Airlines, and they were drafted in to bring the supplies to Europe. And then I had an older sister who was a nurse who joined the Red Cross and took care of things on the home front.
And all four of you made it back home?
Yeah, we made it back home without being wounded, too. That's another thing. I mean, we were in the middle of it, like Lee in Hawaii, but we didn't get hurt ourselves.
And after everything you saw in your personal experience, you know the odds of all four coming home with nothing is...
Rare. Very rare. No, I consider our family was lucky. Even my father became a guard at the gun factory. Because he wanted to do his part.
That family component is often overlooked when we focus on one individual veteran's contributions. The reality is so many who were celebrating victory 75 years ago had already had to deal with loss. Loss of fellow soldiers, sailors, airmen, and yes, sometimes of siblings as well. I spoke to my friend Niall Smith this week. He and his Scottish war bride Phyllis were in a very interesting spot 75 years ago. Niall had survived a horrific B-17 crash 13 months earlier. He was decorated for saving the lives of others, including the pilot, after a German night fighter intruder pilot had shot the plane down on its approach to an airbase in England.
I had a buddy who worked up in personnel, and he came down and saw me. He says, "Hey, the war is going to be over tomorrow. I'm married by then, see. If you want to pass and you want to get out of here, you get your pass and get out, because they're throwing a restriction on the base. Nobody gets on or off when the announcement is made." So I got my pass, and Phyllis and I were sitting in the theater in Edinburgh when Churchill came on the screen and announced the war was over.
Huh.
And here's all these other guys back at the base.
Was there a big cheer in the theater when that announcement was made?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't tell anybody what I knew or anything, see, but I think people kind of knew it was going to happen.
And what did Winston Churchill have to say 75 years ago? Hear for yourself when we come back. Plus, stories from 8 more veterans about where they were and how they experienced VE Day. Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.